Good morning. States hit Meta with a lawsuit that could change the company for good.
They're alleging that this company designed these products so that they were purposely addictive, so that young people, you know, really didn't stand a chance at sort of saying no and putting their phone down.
Why Democratic leadership is refusing to back one of its senior members in a Florida primary, and how airlines are pushing back on ICE activity at the gate. It's Tuesday, August 18th. I'm Gideon Resnick, in for Shmita Basu. This is Apple News Today. Meta is back in court today to defend itself against states alleging that apps like Instagram and Facebook harm kids. This time, the company claims that states want $1.4 trillion in damages, a figure that could bring them down. Garrett DeVink is covering the trial for The Washington Post.
What the governments are going for here is really big and could have some serious consequences for Meta.
The attorneys general from California, Colorado, Kentucky, and New Jersey will argue that Meta designed their apps to keep kids glued to their phones, with features recommendation algorithms, beauty filters, and infinite scroll, where, as it sounds, your feed never ends.
And then that also had effects in their lives. They were comparing each other to their peers, that they were seeing things online that were unrealistic in terms of what they should look like, how they should act, how they should feel. And this was led to all sorts of depression, anxiety at a really large scale.
And the states argue that Meta lied to the public about the risks their products posed to children.
They were telling the public, they were telling journalists, they were telling parents, they were telling lawmakers that, no, our products are actually fine. We've put in all sorts of limits to make sure that this doesn't actually happen.
Yesterday, California Attorney General Rob Bonta explained the state's position in a BBC interview.
We hope that the industry can stop hurting kids. As a father and as the attorney general for the biggest state in the nation, that is my hope here, that prospectively, the practices that hurt kids, that knowingly hurt kids, will end.
The lawsuit claims Meta benefited financially from hooking kids on social media because the company earns money through ads on the platforms. And the suit says Meta gathered data on kids in violation of federal law.
They're asking it to delete any algorithm that was trained on kids' data. They're asking it to get rid of infinite scrolls. So you would be scrolling on social media and then it would just end at a certain point, right? And so these are pretty invasive changes for the government to order a private company to make. They also raise all kinds of free speech questions, right? I mean, that is really the defense that Meta and other social media companies have had over the years when it comes to people trying to regulate or change the way they run their platforms, which is, look, this is free speech. We're allowing people to connect with one another, to sort of reach in and say to kids or, you know, anyone else on our platform that you can't see this thing that is out there on the internet seems like a free speech violation.
Meta says that these claims are unsubstantiated and that they stand by their record on protecting teens. Now, legal experts doubt any judge would impose a fine so large that it would bankrupt Meta. But the company is under increasing pressure as these legal cases mount. This month, a New Mexico judge ordered Meta to pay over $500 million over misleading users of the dangers on its app, bringing the total from that state alone to nearly $1 billion. And Meta posted a rare profit decline last month, in part thanks to the costs of all these trials. And this case could be the biggest financial reckoning for Meta since these lawsuits began. It comes at a tricky time for the company. Meta remains hugely profitable with healthy revenues, but it's also trying to drive up its spending.
The stakes are really high for Meta. They need their business to continue humming. They need to be able to continue to make money so that they can invest in artificial intelligence to keep up with Google, OpenAI, Anthropic, Microsoft, all the other tech companies that are diving towards artificial intelligence in this new era of technology we're entering.
CEO Mark Zuckerberg is expected to testify. It would be his second time on the stand this year. It's another primary day, and Florida voters will be weighing in on a crowded governor's race to replace term-limited Ron DeSantis and selecting nominees in House districts that were controversially redrawn earlier this year. Thanks to those changes, one particularly messy primary has unfolded for Democrats. It's one that's forced difficult questions about who should represent districts with large Black electorates. Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz has been in the House since 2005. She was the former chair of the DNC and a regular on cable television. Despite her prominence, her path back to the House has upset some of the party's most senior figures. After the state's redistricting, Wasserman Schultz faced a tough fight to keep her seat. So she jumped to a neighboring race.
She decided to run in a different district, which is Florida's 20th district.
Claire Heddles is a senior reporter with the Miami Herald,
which has been a historically Black district for the past more than 30 years, and it is a safe Democratic seat.
Her decision has angered a lot of Florida and national Democrats, as she is the only white candidate in the race. After the Supreme Court struck down a provision of the Voting Rights Act earlier this year, the Congressional Black Caucus has worried that many of their members will be effectively drawn out of power, especially in the South.
Hakeem Jeffries was asked twice early on if he would endorse her, and he declined to endorse her, which is significant because she's on his leadership team. She had said early on that she had had conversations with the Congressional Black Caucus. A Congressional Black Caucus leader said after she announced that they hadn't supported her decision to run in this district.
When asked about the district's historically Black representation in a recent CBS interview, Wasserman Schultz said that her background was important for constituents.
Representation matters, and experience matters as well. And voters hopefully will make a decision. I trust that voters will make the decision based on the totality of the qualities they look for in a candidate. But it's essential right now to make sure that we have someone with the experience to deliver for Broward County and not just starting out.
Wasserman Schultz is facing four Black candidates in the primary. That includes Sheila Sherfalis McCormick, who resigned from the seat earlier this year amid federal money laundering charges. She has pleaded not guilty and insists that she can win back her seat. Another candidate is a 27-year-old progressive activist and substitute teacher.
So those four candidates had briefly considered consolidating around one of them to try to defeat Debbie Wasserman Schultz because they saw her as making a kind of cynical, selfish choice by running in this district. But they ended up not consolidating, so we still have all four of them still running in the race and Debbie.
Wasserman Schultz already represents a voting age population that is majority non-white. But it's far rarer for a white lawmaker to represent a majority or plurality Black district. In fact, an AP analysis indicates that she would be the only Democrat in that position if she wins today and in November. The Trump administration wants America's airports to play a bigger role in its immigration crackdown, a move that's creating tensions with airline companies.
People go through the TSA checkpoint, are just sitting ducks waiting for their flight to board.
Andrew Tangle covers aviation at the Wall Street Journal, and he says arrests started to pick up in July when officers expanded their scope and started to target people with expired visas, who might have another form of legal status pending, like a green card application.
So you've got people with what had historically been sort of more minor or routine immigration infractions being targeted.
Like Chantal Morales Rojas, a 27-year-old from Ecuador living in California, working as an au pair. After scanning her boarding pass for a Southwest flight in late July, an alarm started to ring. The gate agent told Morales Rojas to wait. Then she was approached by two plainclothes ICE agents on the jet bridge, who eventually took her away.
Chantal, stop! Where are you? Help! Help! Help us!
The Department of Homeland Security says her visa expired. Her lawyer says Morales Rojas had filed an application to stay in the country before then. By the end of July, when she was detained, ICE was making up to 36 arrests every day. But now Tangle says major airlines are pushing back.
Airlines do not want their gates and their airplanes to be at the latest front line of the Trump administration's push to arrest immigrants. In some cases, an airline is not letting ICE agents onto their aircraft unless they have a judicial warrant, not just an administrative warrant. In another case, ICE requested cooperation from an airline to arrest somebody on a jet bridge, but the airline declined to assist ICE with their request.
Tangle spoke to officials in the airline industry who told him they don't want ICE agents near their gates. They'd rather officers make arrests near TSA checkpoints.
These arrests, when they happen, are putting airline employees and their passengers and airport employees in very awkward and potentially dangerous situations. We've all seen what has been happening on American streets in cities like Minneapolis and elsewhere. There have been some very violent confrontations.
ICE leaders have said that agents should make arrests at the checkpoints when possible. Last month, the agency made a record number of arrests, and Border Czar Tom Homan told Newsmax recently that they wanted to continue the pace.
June was the highest month in the history of the agency. July, they broke another record, and I expect to break another record in August. Am I happy with the number right now? No, I want more too. And as we bring these thousands of more agents on, we expect those numbers to increase, and we're going to keep fighting.
Airline industry officials told the Journal that they want clarity from the federal government on how immigration enforcement will happen at airports. And a union representing flight attendants wrote to a number of carriers earlier this year that they were concerned about the ICE activity. Here are a few other stories we're following today. The state murder trial for Luigi Mangione has been postponed indefinitely, as his lawyers are looking to get the case thrown out on double jeopardy grounds. That's because last week he pleaded guilty to federal charges in the killing of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson in 2024. Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg said that he would contest efforts to end the state case, in part because Mangione's federal sentence has yet to be determined. In New York, state prosecutions can be barred if a federal case involving the same course of conduct ends in a guilty plea. It will first be up to a judge to decide on this double jeopardy claim. The number of parents choosing not to vaccinate their children in the U.S. jumped dramatically this past school year, according to CDC data posted on Monday. About 4.2% of kindergartners had at least one vaccine exemption, which was up from 3.6% the year before. The vast majority were listed as non-medical exemptions. The new data comes amid a 35-year high in the nation's number of measles cases. And as President Trump and HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. have pushed against established medical guidance to change the childhood immunization schedule. And finally, the new British Prime Minister Andy Burnham learned the hard way to be a little more skeptical of suspicious-looking phone messages. That's after he started talking to an imposter pretending to be President Trump's chief of staff, Susie Wiles. Politico reports that a few messages were exchanged before the new PM began to wonder if he was being tricked and stopped talking. It's not the first time something like this has happened, though. Last year, federal authorities launched an investigation into a separate effort to impersonate Wiles after senators, governors, and top business leaders reported receiving messages from someone claiming to be her. In this case, nothing sensitive was thought to have been revealed. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the news app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. Women's Health reports on how growing interest in spiritual wellness has led many to lean on psychics, leaving some open to financial exploitation. If you're listening in the podcast app, you can follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story, and I'll be back with the news tomorrow.